Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Last week, members of the Freedom Convoy posted a video on Facebook urging children and parents to honor Orange Shirt Day. It asked children to walk out of class on February 11th. It was meant to be an act of solidarity with those involved in the truckers' protest in Ottawa and on international borders. However, February 11th is not Orange Shirt Day. It is September 30th. That is a national day to commemorate children who were sent to residential schools. The video sparked outrage among Indigenous communities and many Canadians, including those in Alderville. It also caught the attention of Alderville First Nations Chief Dave Mowat. In today's interview, Chief Mowat will address this incident and other aspects of the convoy that have touched the Indigenous community. Some of it you may not even be aware of. I'm so pleased to have with me today Dave Mowat, Chief of the Alderville First Nation. Welcome to Consider This.
Thanks, Rob. Nice to be here.
For those who may not know, last Thursday, a video was posted by members of the Freedom Convoy on Facebook calling on people to participate in Orange Shirt Day. They urged children to walk out of school on February 11th. What was your reaction upon learning that this was happening?
Well, I was offended by it, first off. February 11th has nothing to do with Orange Shirt Day, which is now National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, and so I didn't see the reasoning behind it. I couldn't see the reasoning behind it. I saw it as just trying to co-opt our people and hijack a very special and important day, which occurs on September 30th. And as you know, Rob, we had I put out a call for a sea of orange for last year. On September 30th, and we had a real strong outpouring of support from not only within the community, but outside of the community, from our allies in Coburg and Camelford and the whole surrounding area. So when I heard that and saw that, I was offended by that. And then, I should say a little annoyed at that because of the high level of national support around that issue, and then to have these people suggesting that that should occur on February 11th was just a slap in the face, in my opinion. Historically, the children would be picked up and taken to the schools in September. So they certainly wouldn't be picked up and taken away to the schools in February, in the depths of winter. I just saw it as an affront against that special day, which is September 30th of every year.
Now, is there any significance at all for February 11th within the Indigenous community? There are a number of First Nations who are expressing their condemnation of this move by protesters. What do you know about the reaction from other communities or others in your community?
Well, I've been in touch with other leaders, and particularly the Grand Council Chief of the Anishinaabeg Nation, Grand Council Chief Reg Nagonaby, and we had some private discussions about this. And here's the thing, Rob, is that I believe in in the manifesto that was, I guess you might want to call it that, put out by the by whoever these leaders are, they suggested that the Liberal government should roll over, and they, whoever they are, a committee of they, and the Senate and the Governor General should then take on the leadership of the country. In my view, it's insane. But now here's the thing, is that our relationship, our historical relationship with is with the Crown, the British Crown and the federal Crown. Our treaties are with the, historically, with the British Crown, and then post-1867, our treaties are enshrined in a very important relationship with the federal Crown. And so to suggest that some tripartite council should take over the governing of the country suggests that these people have no idea whatsoever about that historical relationship between First Nations people and Canada. And so our relationship, again, to reiterate for your listeners, our relationship is an important, historically important, sacred relationship between the Crown and between the First Nations, and our treaties hold down that relationship. And this group has no inkling at all of what that means. And so, in my view, it's just disturbing that they would even consider such a thing as what they were putting out. And just to be pretty blunt, it's not well respected within the First Nation community from the people I've been talking to. And in our own community, not a lot of people are up in arms about it. It just seems to be something that they're observing and watching. I haven't talked to a lot of people. People are just watching it from a distance. And I don't believe that there's a great deal of support for what's at the core of this issue related to what they're screaming about. I mean, it started with Tucker vaccination and cross-border mandate, et cetera. We all know that, and that it's sort of ballooned into God knows what, and I really don't know what their cause is myself. In fact, I'm just, I read the news, but I got other things to worry about other than this issue right now. It is catching the minds and the imagination and the heart and soul of the nation. But the day-to-day here in Alderville certainly doesn't involve that.
Has there been any major changes recently around the policies and procedures in the Alderville First Nation?
Well, what we did when this whole thing started in March 2020, I mean, we were grasping just like most leaders in the country and around the world, actually. I mean, I've never been involved in anything like this. And so we ended up mirroring what the province was putting down insofar as its measures. And we tried to walk in tandem with the province. There was a basic acceptance of what we were required and asked to do. When it comes to the vaccination, we ran a number of clinics here. And historically, First Nations people have been decimated by infectious diseases. Smallpox is probably one of the most historical infectious disease sort of catastrophes that hit upon Indigenous peoples in North America. And so it was no surprise to me that there would be a strong uptake of the vaccinations when they came to the community. There was a strong uptake, actually. the health unit, the Coosa Pine Ridge Halliburton Health Unit, and we offered the vaccination to our members and their immediate households in Northumberland County. And I just, I'll give you some rough numbers through communication with our health, community health nurse. There were upwards of 1,200 plus doses that were administered here in Alderville First Nation. And so it was no real surprise to me that our people would be concerned about getting the vaccine here, because historically, infectious disease has impacted First Nations people dramatically. And so when it comes to mask wearing, it's sort of been a common evolution out of this whole thing. Nobody has complained to us in Alderville First Nation. None of our members have been ranting and raving about their freedoms being impacted. We're just sort of rolling with the punches, if you will, and hoping to get out of this safe and healthy. I can report that one member of Alderville First Nation, an officer member, passed away from COVID about 3 weeks ago. The person passed away in Hamilton and was not vaccinated. But on reserve, we've been safe and we've been healthy. There have been some cases recently with the Omicron variant, but they are all being well managed, and people are still are healthy and safe, and they've done what they've had to do as far as isolation.
I'd like to go back to something you said earlier that I think is significant, and I'd like to ask you about cultural appropriation or co-opting. And is this an example that we're watching with the Freedom Convoy?
Well, I guess, first of all, I just want to qualify by saying that, you know, the media, depending on who one reads and depending on which media outlet one goes to, you're going to, obviously, as you would know, get their view and get the interpretation of events from whoever you might seek your news from. And so there is a variety of interpretations and viewpoints that are coming out of this issue. But the first important thing for your listeners is that Ottawa sits on unceded Algonquin Anishinaabeg territory. It's unceded. We accept that. We, in the in our communities, we understand that. And so that's the first problematic issue, is that, in my view, and I will say the Algonquin Nation, those in Quebec, those in Ontario, did put out a press release, did put out a statement related to this Freedom Convoy that they had nothing to do with it, and they do not support what's going on. And so that's the first important thing, is that nobody seems to have contacted the Algonquin Nation in Ottawa or in the surrounding area to determine whether or not they should do this or do that on that sacred ground. I did see some photographs of people sitting around a circle, and I don't know who they were. To me, it looked offensive. And then I saw some drumming, which, again, depending on who was taking the video and putting it up, it was pretty offensive to me. I've been in enough drum circles to know that whatever they were doing was nothing that we would support. And so, in fact, it was almost embarrassing to see some of that stuff, Rob, what I saw. It was almost embarrassing. And they should be embarrassed, these people that are trying to suggest that they have the support of the First Nations. Hey, look, individually, there might be some First Nations people that are down there and or support this, but on a from a provincial territorial organizational level, PTO level, like the Anishinaabeg Nation, we do not support it. you know, the Assembly of First Nations on down, nobody has come out and said anything about this in any supportive way. When I see the co-opting and when I see this sort of appropriation, it's offensive. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. You know, it's been a long haul historically in Canada, where we see our cultural attributes and ceremonies starting to be respected in Canadian society. And then to see this in Ottawa, what I've seen is it's embarrassing and it's maddening. It's frustrating. And I don't want to go on and on about it, but I have enough experience around the drum and you know, pipe ceremonies and ceremonies in general to know that what I've seen down there is has been embarrassing.
Since we are speaking about recognizing children within the Indigenous community and the trauma they face, a month ago, the federal government released details of a $40 billion settlement to compensate Indigenous children harmed by the Canadian child welfare system. Can you tell us about the background?
Child and Family Services on Reserve goes back to about the 50s, I guess, when it becomes, when Canada and Ontario become formally involved. And there was always inequities in that relationship and in that any funding formulas that came out through that relationship. And so by not funding, now I'm not a expert on this, so I rely on our child and family services people to inform me on this, so I don't want to suggest that I'm in any way an expert on this. Our staff that work within this field here in Alderville and or PTO level, they have a lot more experience than I do. But I do know that there were always inherent inequities in that relationship and in the funding formulas that came out to allow First Nations to care and put down prevention programs in the communities to avoid children from being taken away. And when we move into the 60s, we come upon a time that's now known as the 60s scoop. And what that was children being taken from the communities by children's aid societies, in some cases being adopted out. And there was no regard for the in-house, in-home, in-community care and prevention services that should have been provided. And so there was a large number of children that became victims of the welfare system and became victims of the children's aid societies. And so throughout the decades, then there's been this back and forth and a tug of war when it comes to administering the proper amount of resources to allow children to stay within their communities. And so it became the responsibility of the First Nations caring society to sort of take this on and move it forward. And so we did see the Human Rights Tribunal come down with a decision in 2016, and then now we're at a point where we've seen a financial package come through. But it's a long history of intrusion by the state in First Nations communities. And again, it sort of speaks to the racist viewpoint of government towards First Nations children. And then, you know, out of this process too comes the Jordan's principle issue related to children first. Jordan's principles, basically the principle is that when a child is requiring service, immediate service, that service should be supplied, provided by the first department or government department or agency that is contacted where your request goes to. And then the argument over who pays for it, that'll come after. So Jordan's principle is an important component of all this. So it all harks back to decades of inequity and I'm just going to put it out there, racism. And so now that we're in this period moving forward, we hope that to be rectified in new funding arrangements and finally the recognition of what the Human Rights Tribunal put down.
Now, it's important in terms of recent history to understand that the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal began in 2016, and it's actually been a 15-year fight. I think if you look back, the federal government has fought this case ever since the very beginning. From your perspective, why do you think they did this?
Yeah, well, that's a hard question to take on. If you know the history of First Nations and Crown relations, it's no surprise that the federal government would take this stance. There's always been an attempt to break down the communities. When we go back to back as far as Confederation, and even before that, there's always been an attempt to assimilate First Nations children right back to the 1850s in Alderville, in fact. Perfect example is the Alderville Industrial School, which was aimed at assimilation, which was aimed at removing any cultural traits and attributes from the children and separating children from the parents by way of religious and agricultural and education instruction. And so that's what occurred at Alderville. It failed. But the industrial school plan was aimed at that. And then, of course, we move into the residential school issue, which separated children and tried to break them down and remove them from their communities. So it's a long continuum of this process. It's over 100 years, decades and decades, generations and generations of removing children from the influence of their communities and from the influence of their parents. And so, in my view, and I'm not an expert on child welfare, but in my view, it's just a continuum of what's been happening since the 1850s.
The settlement that they have been able to reach is for $40,000 per child. What's your reaction to that settlement?
I believe the ages within, or the years within that agreement, or the years in which that is captured, is between 2006 and 2016. I have no idea at this point how that will play out. I do not know how that's going to play out, that $40,000 per child. So I'm not going to speak beyond that. I'll go back to my staff at the health services building to see how that's playing out, but I'm not going to speak much beyond that, how that financial plan will play out.
Can you tell us, though, will there be any impact on the people in the Alderville community?
Well, if you're not familiar with it, there is an agency now that is in place, DBCFS, which is the Child and Family Services Agency that has authority over the Child and Family Services file throughout a large catchment area in southern Ontario. Alderville is within that catchment area, and so that has seen processes which allow children to stay in the community, and it's allowing there to be a much stronger prevention services process, which allows children to remain at home and to be educated and or trained and or flexible to important cultural and historical and communal realities in the community. And so it's been a process that has been a long time in the making. But what the DBCFS did is it actually took the role of the historical and the longstanding relations that the former Children's Aid Societies once had over our communities. And so that's been a huge step forward insofar as there being a sort of a an indigenous level of control over this whole file. I can remember when I worked in Northwest Ontario over 25 years ago when the Wampsimoag Community Care Initiative took off, and that involved the White Dog Independent Nations, the White Dog First Nation in Northwest Ontario, because there was a terrible record between Children's Aid Societies and the First Nations in Northwest Ontario. So this whole process of their being control taken away from the Children's Aid Societies, it's been a long time in the making. And I'm involved in some cases directly with the DBCFS agency and Children's Matters within our community. And it is, I could say it's been a huge advancement insofar as Chief of Council and the community having direct input in the matter of children being able to stay within the community. So that's huge when we look back at how so many children at one time were taken from the community.
Are you aware of any members of your community being eligible for this settlement?
At this point, I'm not aware, no.
Chief Dave Mowat, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you very much, Rob.
That was Alderville First Nations Chief Dave Mowat. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.